Our next presenter is Mike Freeberg. He is with the Tobacco Control Legal Consortium in St. Paul, Minnesota. The consortium provides legal technical assistance to jurisdictions around the country working on various tobacco control policies. I know a number of us over the years have really called on their resources, and they've been very, very helpful. He has worked on research projects related to menthol, cigarettes, and butt litter, and non-cigarette tobacco products. He has worked as an adjunct law professor at the William Mitchell College of Law, having taught classes in legislation and public health law. And Mike also serves as a Minnesota state representative. Hey, Minnesota Hill. So his presentation is entitled Cool Menti and Toxic, What to Do About the Problem of Menthol in Tobacco Products. And so I think he's going to really address some issues here in terms of local action.
Hi, thank you. First of all, I should tell you I have a case of bronchitis right now, so I seem to be okay at the moment. Occasionally I will burst into a coughing fit. Hopefully that won't happen here. Somewhat ironically, I've stocked myself well with mentholated cough drops. If I sound like I have something in my mouth, it's because I do. So my name is Mike Freeberg. I'm a staff attorney with the Tobacco Control Legal Consortium, and I'll be talking about some of the ways menthol is or could be regulated at the federal or state and local level, primarily at the state and local level. I just want to mention I have some handouts. This is a poster that we prepared, a reproduction of a poster. I uploaded it to the handout place. I'm not exactly sure where that is, but I think you should be able to get it online. But if you would like a hard copy, I did bring a few with me. So here's my disclosure slide. I used their template. It was kind of a boring slide, so I put in a picture of the comet landing because the comet landing is awesome. But I don't have any relationships to disclose. In case you don't know a whole lot about my organization, the Tobacco Control Legal Consortium, just wanted to tell you a little bit. We're a network of lawyers with the mission of supporting tobacco control policy. Our parent organization is the Public Health Law Center, which coordinates the consortium as well as the Network for Public Health Law. We're based out of William Mitchell College of Law in St. Paul, Minnesota, which is an independent law school. We provide legal technical assistance to advocates and organizations from the 44 states that do not have their own tobacco law center. And we serve people like you who are at the forefront of tobacco control policy around the country. And we offer four types of support. First, we educate and train people. So a training would be something like what I'm doing up here. We also have publications on various tobacco control topics that you can find on our website. Second, we help public health professionals, advocates, and government attorneys develop effective tobacco control policies. We'll provide drafting assistance with ordinances, rules, laws, regulations, and legislation. And third, as part of our mission to provide free legal technical assistance, we can help you to analyze proposed laws and laws that are already on the books and to understand the arguments that are being raised by opponents. And finally, our litigation support includes drafting friend-of-the-court briefs and discussing legal strategy. And we do this all for free. That's what our funders fund us to do, is to provide legal technical assistance to people working on tobacco control policy. So don't, you know, some people are afraid to call a lawyer. I hope that's not the case with us. So here's what I'm going to talk about in this presentation, and this is a pretty savvy crowd, so I'll keep the first parts short, and also Joanne and Dr. Fallon both did a good job of covering some of the federal issues going on. So I do want to talk a little bit about the legal framework in place for local and state governments to act on issues like menthol, but I'll spend the bulk of my time talking about various policy options that a state or local government could use to address the issue of menthol. So Joanne walked us through the history of FDA inaction on menthol, but here's just another short timeline showing what happened. You know, I guess it's safe to say that the public health community has been frustrated with the lack of visible output coming from the FDA. I think that's probably a nice way of saying it. But in over 5 years since Congress punted the question of menthol to the FDA, the FDA has undertaken two exhaustive reports, both of which concluded, as we suspected, that menthol is bad for public health, and then issued a non-binding advance notice of proposed rulemaking last year, and it's essentially been quiet since then. So, you know, we at the consortium certainly think, in light of the FDA's inaction, it's going to be up to state and local governments to address the problem of menthol. But as I mentioned, there's been some question about whether or not that's actually within their authority, so I wanted to talk about that a little bit. Now, we've talked, Joanne mentioned the Family Smoking Prevention and Tobacco Control Act, which Congress passed in 2009. And that, you know, obviously the big thing that law did was give the FDA authority to regulate tobacco products in ways that improve public health and created the Center for Tobacco Products within the FDA. But one of the other things, one of the less publicized things that that law did was spell out the regulatory boundaries between the FDA and state and local governments. And it's not entirely crystal clear. It uses some words that aren't defined, but it can give us sort of a general sense of the authority of state and local governments to regulate menthol and OTPs. The preservation clause, that's the first bullet point there, says that states and by extension local governments can adopt tobacco control regulations related to the sale, distribution, advertising, promotion, information, and taxation of tobacco products, among other things. And it specifically says there, you can see on the third line in parentheses, it says, including prohibition on sale. So prohibiting the sale of tobacco products is one thing that state and local governments have the legal authority to do. There is a preemption clause in the Act. I don't know how many of you are attorneys, but basically preemption is when what might be considered a higher level of government tells a what might be considered a lower level of government that it can't regulate in a certain area. So the preemption clause in the Tobacco Control Act specifically says that state and local governments cannot adapt tobacco product standards. That's probably the most relevant provision. There are a few other things related to labeling and packaging and things like that where local and state action is also preempted. For purposes of our menthol discussion, the most relevant provision is the tobacco product standards provision. Tobacco product standards isn't actually defined in the Act, but it most likely means things related to the manufacture of tobacco products. So a state couldn't tell a tobacco manufacturer that their cigarettes have to be manufactured a certain way. So there is that preemption clause, but the savings clause in the third bullet point basically emphasizes the point that the preemption clause does not apply to sale, distribution, possession, and the things mentioned in the preservation clause. So the Act made clear, it stated it twice, that regulating the sale of tobacco products and the distribution of tobacco products is firmly within the authority of state and local governments. So here are two examples of sales restrictions adopted by city governments. Now, one's from New York City, and the other is from Providence, Rhode Island. Both restrict the sale of flavored non-cigarette tobacco products. New York City allows the sale to continue in tobacco bars. They have 8 of them there. And Providence allows the sale to continue in smoking bars. Now, unfortunately, for purposes of our discussion, both of these ordinances excluded menthol as a flavor, as well as mint and wintergreen flavors. I assume they exempted menthol, both for political reasons, but I mentioned that these ordinances apply to non-cigarette tobacco products, and, you know, menthol is absolutely an issue with regard to those products as well, but at least when you talk about menthol, I think the first things people tend to think about is mentholated cigarettes. Now, both of these ordinances were challenged in courts, federal courts upheld both of these ordinances using language that pretty strongly supports the authority of state and local governments to regulate the sale of tobacco products. Opponents of the ordinances, largely tobacco manufacturers and retailers, argued that they weren't sales restrictions, they were actually tobacco product standards, like what I mentioned earlier, that are preempted by the Tobacco Control Act. But the courts didn't agree with them and held that Providence and New York City was within their authority to adopt these ordinances. So what is the relevance to menthol? Now, the New York City and Providence ordinances applied only to non-cigarette tobacco products. And with regards to the products the ordinances applied to, they continued to allow the sale of products with a menthol flavoring. But if courts continue to sort of broadly support the authority of state and local governments, I certainly don't see a reason why a state or local ordinance couldn't apply to menthol-flavored cigarettes. We know the FDA hasn't acted yet, so, we think it's an area of untapped potential, but it is starting to be tapped as we're talking about. And, just to be sure, any sort of prohibition on the sale of menthol-flavored tobacco products would be vigorously challenged by tobacco manufacturers and tobacco retailers. But, you know, if a local health department were to craft a sales restriction similar to the New York City or Providence ordinances, but broaden the scope to include menthol-flavored cigarettes, we think there's a real chance that a court would uphold it. We know menthol cigarettes are a public health problem, and so certainly a sales prohibition would seem to be the most logical and effective way of addressing it. So, you know, along those lines, we know that we already heard that Hawaii introduced legislation this year to prohibit the sale of menthol tobacco products. So at least some state legislators certainly think this is something within the authority of state governments. Unfortunately, it wasn't adopted during Hawaii's legislative session. But if a total sales prohibition, you know, if you think that might be going too far in your jurisdiction, there are other things you could do that might be short of that. So maybe the sale of menthol tobacco products could be limited to certain locations. We know menthol tobacco products pose a risk for youth tobacco initiation, so maybe a local government could restrict the sale to adult-only facilities to lessen the chance that youth would be able to start using tobacco. Maybe a local government could say that only 5 retail establishments in the city could sell mentholated tobacco products. Or maybe you could prohibit the sale of mentholated tobacco products within 500 feet of a school. And, of course, a couple people have already mentioned the Chicago ordinance. I don't know why you chose this picture to represent Chicago. I apologize if I offended anybody from Chicago. Now, Chicago's ordinance applies to all flavored tobacco products, including cigarettes and smokeless, and it includes all flavors. So whether you're talking about chocolate or whether you're talking about menthol, it's covered. The Chicago ordinance does exempt retail tobacco stores, but there probably aren't very many establishments that meet that definition. So this is definitely a regulation that affects menthol cigarettes. And, of course, that threatens the bottom line of the tobacco industry and the tobacco retailers, and it's already been challenged in court. But as was the case in Providence and New York City, the preliminary court rulings are looking pretty favorable, I think, to our side. So there hasn't been a final adjudication yet, but the several gas stations challenged the ordinance. And they asked for a temporary restraining order to prevent the ordinance from being implemented. And the judge just last week, this is hot off the press, denied that request. So using pretty strong language to suggest that, you know, that the judge felt that Chicago was within its rights adopting this ordinance. So this says here, the ordinance simply says where certain types of tobacco products cannot be sold. The ordinance falls squarely within the exception to preemption established by the federal act. So we're pretty optimistic that state and local governments can regulate menthol. But, these are the things that have been, sales restrictions seem to be the most talked about way to do it, but, you know, we do think it's an area where state and local governments can actually be kind of creative about it. So the Tobacco Control Act stated that state and local governments can regulate the time, place, and manner, but not the content of the advertising or promotion of any cigarettes. Now, it's not an area where state and local governments have really waded into yet. And there are, I just want to make clear, very serious potential issues with the First Amendment if a city or state were to adopt it. But it is an area that the Act specifically references, so we think, you know, it's an area worth considering anyway. So maybe a local government could restrict the marketing of menthol tobacco products within 2,000 feet of a school. Again, we know menthols can be a vehicle for youth initiation, so there would be a public health rationale certainly to adopt a regulation like that. Again, just to continue with the youth initiation theme, you know, we know menthol is a vehicle for youth initiation. We know that potential youth tobacco users are particularly price sensitive, so perhaps an option would be to tax mentholated tobacco products at a higher rate than non-mentholated products to discourage youth use. There are a couple potential problems with this. First of all, most local governments don't actually have taxation authority, but there are a few that do, so you'd want to make sure it was actually within the authority of a local government. Otherwise, it would have to be considered at the state level. Second, you know, if you were to consider something like that, it might be vulnerable, particularly to arguments that it's regressive. I know the Chicago Board of Health, when it was considering the Chicago ordinance, specifically discussed that question, and I think a majority of the members of the Board of Health felt that that is the case, so they decided not to go after an approach like this. But, you know, yeah, and just along those lines, mentholated tobacco products are more popular in low-income communities, so I think that's an argument that could gain traction. But the Tobacco Control Act does call out taxation as one of the areas, arrows in state and local government's quivers, so it may be a discussion worth having. But, you know, of course, taxes are always politically controversial, so maybe there are other price-related things that a state or local government could consider. In conjunction with the ordinance regulating flavored non-cigarette tobacco products, Providence, Rhode Island, also adopted an ordinance prohibiting the redemption of coupons that lower the price of tobacco products and also prohibited multi-pack discounts. So again, you know, menthol is popular with youth. Youth are price sensitive. Maybe local coupon and multi-pack discount restrictions could be applied to menthol tobacco products. This is another area that doesn't get too much attention, but the Tobacco Control Act does say that information reporting to the state is one example of a law where state and local authority is preserved. So maybe you could require tobacco companies to disclose how much they're spending on marketing mentholated tobacco products in your jurisdiction to determine whether menthol products are being targeted to low-income or other priority populations. Tobacco companies would probably argue that that sort of law is burdensome, particularly if it's done like at a local level, so it might be better to do it at a statewide level or to require them to disclose information that they already have just to help it survive judicial scrutiny. We do have a fact sheet on disclosures if you're interested. Finally, again, you know, just keep coming back to the youth initiation possibility. Maybe you could just raise the age to purchase mentholated tobacco products to discourage that as a way for youth to start using tobacco. So now, I mean, some of these, you know, obviously some of these are sort of pie-in-the-sky regulations that may not fly in your community, but we feel it's important to just kind of throw different options out there, if only to highlight how many gaps there are related to the regulation of menthol, particularly with the FDA's failure to act in a meaningful way. Sales restriction seems like certainly the most logical approach, but there are precedents for that sort of action that are comparable. But if, you know, that isn't politically possible, you may be able to think creatively about other ways to address the problem of menthol in your community. You know, I could easily spend an hour talking about menthol, but hopefully I was able to convey some information in a shorter period of time. I think state and local action is going to be probably where it's at with menthol in the foreseeable future. So I don't know if I have time for questions or... Oh, okay. Yes, I do. You might need one, actually, because it's being recorded.
I'd just like to say I'm from Chicago, and I'm the co-chair of our Illinois Coalition Against Tobacco, so this is my 32nd year doing this, and that's why I have gray hair. But I think, you know, we're very pleased in Chicago with our menthol ordinance. I can share with you, about 10 years ago in Illinois, we snuck in a law banning BD cigarettes, which are flavored cigarettes, and our legislature didn't really understand that in it it said flavored tobacco. And we snuck it in, and we've never done anything with that, but it was just a thought. That, you know, so now we actually have that in our state law. I don't know if you've ever looked at that. Does everybody know what BDs are? Yeah, so I'm just offering that up.
Sorry. So you're saying the law in Illinois defines a BD as any flavored tobacco, and all BDs.
That's a thought.
Yeah, it's a thought. Certainly worth considering. I mean, I suspect there'd be some a lot of surprised people, but
right. Yeah, because. Yeah, area, because they have flu. I don't
Yeah, well, it might be possible to raise the the distance requirement based on the density of the area that where you're considering a regulation.
Anyhow, so I just, you know, don't give up. I'm getting ready to retire.
I've been in tobacco control for 8 years, and I don't have any hair. I mean, there's some things you'd have to consider kind of out at the outset. I mean, if this is something you're considering at the local level, you need to know that the local government local governments would have the authority to do something like that. There is state-level preemption as well, so a lot of, in some states, local governments are prevented from considering things like that. It's certainly assuming there is authority, I mean, it's certainly an interesting idea. I'm just trying to think through what some of the implications of it might be. You know, if it would make it easier for larger chain retailers to sell mentholated tobacco products, if you raised it at a certain amount. I mean, I guess if menthol is that big of a percentage of their sales, and I know it is a big percentage. I mean, it seems like a lot of people would do it. You'd have to set it at a substantially higher level, I would think, to get. To actually lower the number of retailers selling menthol. I certainly think lowering the number of retailers selling menthol is a good goal. So that could well be one way of doing it. I guess I just haven't thought enough about it to say off the top of my head.
Okay.